You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. Big shout out to the Eagles for going to the Super Bowl. And in honor of them today, we're having a Philadelphia food guest. We have Omar Tate and Sybil St. Aude Tate from Honeysuckle Provisions and Honeysuckle Projects. We've been following their story for quite a few years, and we're so excited that they're finally sitting down with us on the show. We talk about how they met, their shared history, how art and poetry drives what they do, and what community means to them. And then we go into the archives as we have a live performance from Miwa La Lupa, who sat down with Greg years ago in the Shipping Containers, a multi-instrumentalist from Buffalo, New York, and it's a really, really great performance. And on one final note, we're sending our love to Hannah and Connor and everyone over at Gemini. We loved your pastries. We can't wait to see what you do next. And if you have a chance, they're still serving them up through mid-February. So please go check them out, order something for Valentine's Day, and send your love and support. You will not be let down. They're some of the best baked goods in the biz. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hear Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
If you're facing a judge with a fistful of drugs, all accomplices fled from your sight, the responsible one feels the wrath, takes the brunt of it all with a false sense of pride. The papers all follow you from town to town. Your exes all forward the mail. For 36 moons, little food on her plate. She's an outlaw in the salty state. If you're still up at dawn, feeling trashed like a pawn in a game all the animals play, light a candle to pray, light the bowl and relate to the wild ones, the witches and slaves. She fought for a freedom that doesn't exist. What's wrong with these people? She cried. Just 4 years ago, and her case is dismissed. We'll drive round the border and fly. The shackles will fall to the ground. Released from the spell for a while. Don't punish a made-up mistake. Only two things to choose, either jail time or blues. The latter choice must make you stronger, be it one state or more. If you don't know the laws, your sentence could stretch on forever. The bright side of torture is stories for days. The skeleton's out of the closet. The music is soothing, inspiring to boot. The slow-moving sweet dissonance. The shackles will fall to the ground, released from the spell for a while. Her record was cleaned by the maid. Don't punish a made-up mistake.
Sybil and Omar, welcome to Snacky Tunes. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure. Spoke for you. Is it your pleasure too?
I think it's everyone's pleasure.
My pleasure as well. Thank you.
There's a lot of things I want to get to, but you know, as someone who was born and raised in Philadelphia, and you guys are coming to some Philly, let's hit the most important topic of the day. How many points will the Eagles beat the Chiefs by about a week from now? What are we talking like?
You know, I'm superstitious about these kinds of things, man. You're not going to trap us? You're not going to trap us?
No, I'm going to answer because I'm a recent convert to the Eagles. I was born and raised a Jet fan. So having been in Philadelphia for a couple of years now, I've grown to really enjoy the other shade of green. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say that they're going to beat the Chiefs by 14.
Okay. Yeah. I feel pretty good about it. You know, I feel like Mahomes' ankle is just not going to hold out. And, you know, they're going to be greasing the lampposts, like they did this past weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. They're still greased.
They're still greased. So, you know, one of the things I love about growing up and being from Philadelphia is that whether you're from there, you've lived there, you moved there, you really feel the community. And it extends to in the walls of the city. Whenever you meet someone from Philly, you just there's an immediate connection. What does that community mean to you? And having moved back a couple of years ago, how have you integrated yourself into the city?
Mm. Want to go ahead?
Well, yeah, I mean, for being, I guess, a quote-unquote transplant, being newly adapted into the Philly scene, there really is nothing like it. And, you know, you grow up and you hear City of Brotherly Love and you hear all this, like, touristy kind of catchphrases and catchwords. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, having been in the city now for a few years, I can really say that this is definitely, like, a brotherly love kind of city. You know, it's like a stranger feels almost like an annoying brother or annoying kid sister sometimes. And it's different from like New York, right? Or in New York, it's kind of like everyone might be rude. They might be aggressive. They might be like hip and fashion-y. But Philly is just has like this general grittiness and this genuineness. Like it might come off to someone as rude or aggressive, but if you're in Philly, you live in Philly, you grew up in Philly, you know that that's just how people are out here. And it comes from a place of love. And it's so interesting in how we approach what we do and our offerings in the store, because we kind of opened up with this mentality of like, okay, well, these neighbors are it's going to be like they're eating at our own home. And for it to happen, we didn't really have to put too much effort into it besides make the space cute, make the food good, and just be very intentional about what we were doing. And it was just because we're in Philly, it just made sense that every person that walks through that door feels like they're dining intimately with us. And this is like fast cash, right? This is takeout food. We don't have seats.
Sure.
Have space. This is a grocery cafe, but it still feels there's a warmth to it. There's a sincerity to it that I think that could really only exist in Philly, specifically in West Philly. We really have part of the neighborhood here. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up here, right? So for me, it's a little different, because like the thing that I love about our store, kind of like to double down on what Sybil was just saying, it is this kind of like beautiful hub. It's in West Philadelphia, and people come to it and they flock to it and has beautiful energy about it. But when I was growing up, there was nothing really like that, like different hoods that me and my friends or my brothers would hang out in. So like to go to a spot or go to a place with a vibe or whatever, you had to leave your neighborhood. You know, you had to go to town, or you had to go to like, you know, like the Trocadero to go listen to music and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And all these different neighborhoods are, you know, not just West Philly, North Philly, West Philly, South Philly, all these different pockets within Philadelphia outside of the scope of Center City are all building their own situation and making it so that you can kind of diversify where the happenings are happening at. And, you know, one of the most beautiful things about what we're doing here is that we're creating that vibe here in West Philly and having people travel to other parts of the city to come see us. And on top of all that, you know, we're on a strip of other historically black owned, you know, not historically, but black owned businesses that have been around for a number of years. You know, Spirit Foods right next door to us. Atia Ola, she's been in the neighborhood for 30 years serving vegan food. 48th Street Grill is a Jamaican restaurant next door that's been around for about 10 years. And we all talk amongst one another and seeing how, you know, business is kind of like moving in a different way. You know, people are coming to this block, coming to this street, coming to this neighborhood, as opposed to just making everything, you know, downtown the epicenter of everything.
Yeah. And, you know, the Philly food scene has grown so much in the last 10 or 20 years to the point where I remember leaving for college in 2000 and coming back a few years later and being like, oh, wow, Philly has really got a point of view, is really celebrating the people from here in a way that New York was different. New York was just a different beast in its way. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about the two of you, because it's always nice to have a couple on who work together and things like that. And I've read a little bit about your story, but how'd you two meet? And then how did you two decide to not just be together, but to work together? Because that is that's a big jump.
Well, so we met at work. So I think that was probably the foundation for it and why it seems
it's always a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, every time I tell the story, I have to kind of note that it does kind of seem like a corny rom-com. Like it is very kind of love at first sight-ish. And we can't wait for a movie deal in a few years. Omar's going to say he wants Idris Elba to play him. I don't know if that's appropriate. But hey, shoot for the stars.
Really? Right? I don't know. I mean,
I actually think I've been thinking about this over the past week after I said it. And now I'm thinking Donald Glover might be.
Oh, that's appropriate.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I like Donald. Yeah. He's free now. He's not, his show's done. So, you know, he's got time.
Hey, come on.
You know, I've always found that couples I've met through work who can see each other's professional foundation. I've always found that my strongest friendships or relationships that have come out of work, because I'm like, oh, I like the way you actually like handle your business. They really seem to last more than friends who then decide to work together. That doesn't always seem to work.
Yeah. So, I mean, we met at Charleston Wine and Food Festival. We were both doing a dinner with BJ Dennis. He invited us the unofficial godfather of all of our kids. He put us on an event together, and we had known each other because of social media. And
sure.
People kept saying, you know, you have to meet Sybil, you have to meet Omar. And we kind of experienced that, I guess, the week leading up to the festival. And then we met for a bar. We had drinks. We connected. We went to go play. We went to karaoke that same night. It was really fun and exciting. And then we worked the event together. We were prepping all day and it kind of just blossomed. Like it was a full moon and everything seemed right. And we left the festival kind of in love and, ready to like take on the world together. And then the world shut down because COVID happened. And so, 2020. And so everything else blossomed through the intensity of COVID. And so it was a lot of Zooms and a lot of like FaceTimes and a lot of text messages. Emails and stuff like that, and that
memes.
memes. A lot of memes.
A lot of memes.
Yeah, we would talk in meme. That would be one of our.
The hieroglyphs of the 21st century.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the way to court these days. The way to flirt. Yeah. A good meme game. Gotta have it.
Yeah,
but also, Charleston is such a beautiful city to fall in love in. It's so romantic.
Yeah.
I mean, like part of it was, you know, obviously my family is from there. And so in our downtime, Sybil and I, because I've been there a few times. And I can't remember. I think it was your first time in Charleston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've been there a few times and I had relationships and connections, but also had this like tangible relationship to it where my family left homes there. I learned about the plantation where my ancestors were enslaved just outside of Charleston. And so we went to go visit a church, you know, a couple of churches that my family attended. We went to go visit the houses that my family left behind. And we had like this intimate moment of like this connection and relationship. And we ate around while we did it. And then I think that same night, no, the next morning, Sybil flew back to New York and left me in Charleston. And that's where the rom-com part comes in, because I'm bad open around Charleston for a day. And I could have been doing anything else.
Oh, man. I mean, I see all the scenes of the movie. I see the karaoke one, you know. I see the sad music, the wistful looking out into the, you know, maybe doing like a dolphin boat ride in the estuaries by yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see it all. I see a movie.
There. And we had like, when we karaoke'd, we were with two chef friends, Kurt Evans and Kia Damon. So like, you get the comedic approach of just like the funny. You know,
yeah. Listen, we'll talk offline. We'll put something together. We'll get a treatment. It's you know, the other thing I read about both of you, which I really love, and look, it's one thing to connect over food and to cooking and having, that's a bit of history. But you also both have really strong creative backgrounds when it comes to the arts, with poetry, and art itself, and things like that. How did you two connect over that? And then how has that love, that creative passion, fueled your honeysuckle projects?
Okay, I want to tell you something embarrassing. One of the first things that we did was we wrote a poem together.
Oh, no!
Oh!
Yeah, that really happened.
Give me a line. Just give me like two lines.
I don't remember them off the top of my
head. Look, it was karaoke. We wrote a poem. Oh, we were like,
and that was like, God. Yeah, I know. Like, this is not a game. It's really a movie. Paramount Pictures, please come through. But no, you know, there's that. But you know, Sybil has her degree in African American Studies from the University of Maryland. I have been an artist my entire life, writing and doing visual art and. You know, particularly painting and currently learning ceramics and stuff like that. And, you know, Honeysuckle as a pop-up was the integration of art and food as it lasted through New York. And Sybil has written a children's book called Elsie while she was doing her pop-up, Kiona, in New York City. So, you know, we just, through conversation, realized that there were several different connections there and a passion, you know, more importantly than the connection, just a passion for art and food and writing, but in particular to Black cultural aesthetics and rediscovery and reclamation of our heritages and identities. And I think that was kind of like the foundation of all that.
Now, not to jump too far ahead in careers, but Sybil, I know that you were doing pop-ups inspired by Haitian food and Caribbean food, and Omar, you cooked in a lot of venerated Philadelphia and New York restaurants. And jumping ahead a little bit to the launch of Honeysuckle, which was the first time that I had heard about you, Omar, as a chef and the food that you were cooking in. What was the initiation of it? Why did you want to get out of other people's restaurants? And was that the first foray into your own type of project? And how do you feel with it if it was your first, that it just seemed to hit immediately and you've been able to continue it on?
Yeah, so you know, after working 18 hours feeling exhausted in 2017, I was working at a place called Once Upon a Tart in Soho, which was a brunch and bakery restaurant that operated from very early in the morning till very late. And you know, I enjoyed working there, but I was also really trying to consider what my path could look like of ownership, because I've always wanted to own my own place. And I'm not sure if we can recall, but like around 2016, 2017 is when diversity in food and diversity in restaurants was like kind of like being ushered in. And it's initial mm-hmm. stage. That's when Eduardo Jordan got three stars from the New York Times and I think he won 2 James Beard Awards that year, and all these different things were happening. So I wanted to step away and really learn and dig in about myself and truly understand as an artist and as a creative person in food what that could look like. And that ultimately ended up becoming Honeysuckle Pop-Up after a trip traveling down south and learning about my family's history, learning about Black foodways, but really mostly kind of like gaining a thorough and holistic understanding of how Black culture, Black cultural aesthetics kind of show up in food and in like how it can show up in a menu or in a dining experience and what that looks like as comparable to other experiences in the restaurant space. So that was really the foundation of everything.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, people forget about that time, about how things were starting to shift. And I think, and we're going to talk to you about this after the break, but the pandemic really broke everything open and really exposed a lot of the issues that were going on. We're going to take a quick musical break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk more about Honeysuckle projects, provisions, and what you are doing in the community you're growing in Philadelphia. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
I got a friend with a lot of ambition. He don't got all the right education, but he don't need anybody's permission. It's always a riot on Saturday night. He's in love with a girl whose reputation is showing up alone without a boyfriend. And every time they miss their connection, 'cause he don't know ready to go, no. Is it ever really the right time to fall in love? And so she's dancing all alone in the moonlight, and he's lighting up the sky like a firefly. Will it ever really be? Will it ever really be? She don't have to give him a reason. There's no way that'll wait another season. He brought her in close and told her that most of all, is it ever really the right time to fall in love? And she's dancing all alone in the moonlight. Thank you.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Sybil and Omar of Honeysuckle Provisions and Honeysuckle Projects. And Omar, you were talking about 2016, 2017, about opening and starting your own pop-up and getting a good amount of traction and everything's going well, and then the pandemic hits. And that was a real death blow, I would say, for a lot of pop-ups or restaurants and things like that. But it also took you out of New York full-time and brought you back to Philadelphia. So that's not the worst thing in the world. But coming back to Philly and not being able to do your pop-ups, how did you pivot and what did you see really come to light for what I think a lot of us in the industry knew as a broken food system, but really got highlighted during the start of the pandemic?
I mean, everything kind of got exposed. You know, the cost of food got exposed. Broken food systems, broken governmental systems, all kinds of things got exposed. But, you know, in terms of what got exposed on a personal level for me was that, you know, it doesn't matter how many magazine articles you're in. It doesn't matter how much press you get. It doesn't mean you got money. So as soon as everything shut down, so did I. And I needed to reorganize myself. And I think this is where Honeysuckle Provisions really kind of like started to take shape. It's like, what is the pop-up really about? Is it really about being on the top floor, a penthouse on Wall Street and serving food that costs $150 to $200 a guest? Sure, it could be about that a little bit, but really it's about culture and heritage and, you know, the core of that in the Black community, a lot of that, like the dining experiences that I had, the luxurious dining experiences that I had in my own community, a lot of it happened in a takeout box. And so Honeysuckle became a takeout format that was operating, thankfully, to my friends at South Philly Barbacoa, Ben Miller and Christina Martinez.
But shout out. Legendary Philadelphia.
Yeah. But all, you know, during that time, Sybil and I, we just met in March. The pivot happened in March. And so as I'm doing this takeout concept, Sybil and I are discussing, like, what could this really become? You know, what is the food? What is the concept? Who's it for? How are we going to do it? And we began to have conversations around provisions and the need for groceries and the need for accessibility without compromising talent and skill, you know? And that was really the biggest pivot.
You know, I feel like the pandemic also allowed people to open up non-traditional restaurants, maybe not the right word, but food businesses, where before it was like, oh, so you're not going to be open for lunch and dinner and breakfast, and oh, you're not going to be doing this, and oh, you're not going to be doing that. Well, then you're not really a restaurant. And I feel that people just went, hey, if you can sell good food and support the community and you can survive week to week, that's all that really matters. And it shifted a few things out of that. How did that mentality help shape what you wanted to do as a business and where you wanted to support other people in the food community and where you wanted to shine a spotlight?
Yeah. So the pivot to kind of where we are now, was a pretty natural one. When the shutdown happened, a lot of the businesses that were still standing were the small mom and pop shops that were operating and doing takeout and just kind of existing lo-fi. That really stood out to us. And as Omar said, I mean, he was back in West Philly and we were talking about the concept of provisioning and what that means for the community and how we can kind of show up in that way. And we noticed that West Philly was pretty much devoid of like a good grocery store, right? Mariposa exists and it's a co-op that's actually on Baltimore Ave. That's not too far from us, but where Omar's mom was living in the Mantua community, or the Mantua area of West Philly, we weren't really, the poppy shops might've had a few bell peppers or something inside. You know, they weren't offering fresh groceries, fresh produce. And Philadelphia is such an interesting place geographically because Lancaster County is so close, County so close, South Jersey so close, all this farmland is so close. And yet there's this neighborhood of people who want fresh vegetables, who want access to these things. And they were kind of just lacking in that. And so we saw the opportunity to really dig our heels into this community and just kind of bring everything that people deserved right to their front door. And so the concept of grocery boxes and the concept of, well, how do we kind of give people food that's culturally relative to them, that leans on the healthier side, although we're not afraid to use things like butter, but it kind of leans towards just changing their relationships to food in general. And it didn't have to be on a shiny plate. It didn't have to be on bone china. It could exist in a takeout container. And so we kind of ran with it, and it's been working out really well for us, and people respect it. I mean, oftentimes for our family, we don't eat on full bone china, right? A lot of, we're on the go, and a lot of our meals are takeout meals, or they're kind of like quick meals in the side of the road, all in between meetings or shoots or what have you. And so we wanted to create that kind of environment and establishment in the community for others around us and our neighbors. And it works, and it makes sense. And being intentional about our sourcing and being able to create relationships with Black farmers in South Jersey, Krista Barfield of Farmer John, who does urban agriculture in Philadelphia also, like being able to make these connections and establish these relationships really just helps strengthen what we're trying to do. And people appreciate it. If we care about what they put in their bodies, how can they not care about what they put in their bodies?
I love that. You know, the other thing I was surprised to find out is that you also have a farm. And, you know, I grew up, like I said, Balakin Wood, and I remember going out to Bucks County or out to Jersey to pick blueberries and strawberries and things like that and make jam with my mom. And it's very rural and things like that. But to know that you have a shop in West Philadelphia, but then you also own a farm in Montgomery County, I believe, correct?
We're partnering with a friend of ours who owns a place called Plowshare Farms. And shout out to Plowshare, Teddy shout and Dave, family to us. And our farmer, Dave Thompson, who's been doing the hard work. But yeah, it's in Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Bucks County. That's great. I mean, what was the importance, if you have access and relationships to someone like, you know, Joel Barty and other farmers and things like that, you know, you got a store to run, you got two kids. Why have your own farm? Like, why have a place where you're growing food for yourself? What's the story there beyond just saying we're going to sell what we grow in our shop?
Well, there's several answers to that question, you know, and I feel like the answer to that question keeps changing too as the world's economy keeps changing and it's happening. But I think originally, you know, both Sybil and I are kind of like a generation away or several generations away from the origins of our family story, right? Sybil's family is from Haiti. And although they're from Port-au-Prince, the stories that I hear from her mother and father is that relationship, that connection to not just land, but also sea, is also just like far more prevalent in their daily lives because of the kind of like community and society that exists within that nation. Mm. And then my family being four generations removed from the South, from Charleston, and then even furthermore, I would say 5 to 6 generations removed from actual farming, you know, post the end of slavery, my family moved to the city of Charleston. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of, not a bit of, but like a lot of reclamation in just us farming and redeveloping and reestablishing that relationship to the earth, to the soil, to the dirt. Mm. That kind of like really strikes a personal nerve for us, especially as like, you know, Black people in this country feeling unfounded. You know, oftentimes you see what's going on in the news now. There's just so much disruption in our existences here. And to be able to like stake claim in the earth here in this country is just very special to us. And then beyond that, there's, you know, kind of like this ephemeral way of like joining hands in the plight of the Black farmer. You know, we're farmers too. We're growing our own food. We understand what it takes to provide sustenance for ourselves, not just for ourselves, but for our community, in the same way that someone like Joe Barty is doing, and in the same way that Krista Barfield is doing. You know, that connection, that relationship is very important. And then, you know, I think finally there's supply chain, right?
Yeah.
If you control, you know, what you're growing and how much you can grow, you can control your costs. And at the end of the day, that affects your bottom line, you know? So, yeah.
And I see a lot of the stuff that you grow that makes it in not just the CSA boxes, but winds up on the menu and has a real direct influence to like what people are eating and feeding the community. And I think the thing that I really love about what you've built beyond just the pop-up, which is great and a great way to get started, but you've built this physical clubhouse, this headquarters, this meeting of the minds, this place where people can come. And it's a big stake in the ground. It's a big investment in saying that, like, we are going to have the doors open. You will get fed. We will feed you. We will support your business because it's not a solo adventure. The fact that you're shining a spotlight on Black farmers, Black purveyors, you're looking at different ingredients, different ways to create a new type of ecosystem is really important. How has it been and how has it felt to be, I don't know, the mom and the dad of this clubhouse, of this location, of now that you have your own, you know, your kids and your family and you have your extended family, but it's just, you're welcoming people into your home on a daily basis.
It's exhausting. It is exhausting. I'm going to keep it real.
Keep it real? Yeah. But that means you're doing the good work. That means you're doing good work. Because if you weren't tired, you'd be like, oh, all right, I guess.
Yeah. You know. This is not a walk in the park. And we were not naive to start this venture and think that it was smooth sailing. But what we didn't anticipate was just how much of a nurturing environment we had to create. And we wanted that culture for our employees and our team. And we knew we didn't want a toxic environment. We knew what we didn't want to show up in our space, kind of like how it's existed in other restaurants we've worked at. So that was like, we knew what was going to happen with that. What we didn't expect was to be really, like you said, like the parents of this, of our the front of the house, right? And it's like, and then that is just, that's been really cool because we meet different people. I believe Omar, you might have one time met like a distant cousin, but right? It's just, it's so bonkers because you meet people that you're connected to,
be
family with. And that's like, that's what makes it very special. And we always talk about how we're earth building, a world building with Honeysuckle. And this is just the beginning. And we have plans to branch out and expand and essentially help kind of not only reframe the food ecosystem, but also reframe just humanity and how people interact with each other and just being kind to each other, right? And to being nice and to just seeing each other as we are. And that requires a lot of work and a lot of energy. And so sometimes, you know, for us, at the end of the day, it's really tough. And the sacrifices we've had to make in order to exist for others in this way. But there is something that is very fulfilling in knowing that if something happens to us and Honeysuckle years down the line is still around, that it can exist for our children. And it can exist for the concept or the philosophy can exist for our children's children. And that's special and important because that's the mark that we've been able to make. And that's what we do it for. We don't really do it. Honeysuckle is not for us. We say it all the time. It's not for us. It's barely for our generation. It's a philosophy that we hope can kind of stick into the ground now and spread and expand upon for our children to enjoy and to really reap the benefits of this new ecosystem and this new way of life and this new way of interacting with each other.
I love that. Now all you need is Donald Glover to come in for a sandwich to have that meta moment. Full circle, right?
Yes, 100%.
Well, listen, I can't thank you enough. I'm looking forward to swinging in when I'm back home in Philly. If people want to follow along, see how to order online. I mean, I saw that incredible sweatshirt that you have and all the earthware that you're selling. Where can people go? How can they get a taste of Honeysuckle?
Well, you can come visit us in West Philly at 310 South 48th Street. And what's that? Our website, right?
Yeah.
www.honeysuckleprovisions.com or www.honeysucklephl.com. Both are a great way. All for different things, but a great way. And then we have Instagram. You want to tell them about Instagram?
Yeah. Instagram is Honeysuckle. It's @honeysuckle_provisions. And that's for the storefront and all things food related. And @honeysuckle_projects is more for the overarching brand and art that we create.
Yeah. That beef and broccoli sweatshirts. Very right? Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's great. Well, thank you so much. So great. Shout out to Bailey for connecting us as well. And we have a song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, weighing a combined total of 666 pounds, I give you Hungry Ass You!
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. In the studio with us today, we have Miwi La Lupa coming at you live. Miwi, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, I didn't know your name when reached out, but then when I saw you, I know your face because I've seen you in so many backing bands. How did that career kind of begin as being like a go-to guy for like some of like the biggest names? I mean, you've done stuff with like David Byrne, St. Vincent, LP, Frante, Fela, like honestly, like the who's who list of like when they get ensembles. How did that come about?
Just kind of hustling around the city with a horn or a bass guitar, or just having, and also having several friends, I guess, involved with some of the different bands like the Dap Kings and
Who are former guests on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Tell me where did it be? Like, where did it begin? Because I feel there's roots of being like, you know, a lot of the people come on the show are like bands, and they just bands the fourth. And you are your own songwriter, but there's also like this other career that we don't normally get to talk to of like the kind of like ensemble musician. So like, where does that start?
That starts by, I guess, playing in some bands, like a band like Biondo, a good friend of mine, Eric Biondo. Mm-hmm. He played for many years and just started playing again in Antibalas. So a lot of the Antibalas, you know, I had befriended Antibalas maybe 10 years ago and started playing a little bit with them. And, you know, I guess it just takes one friend to recommend you for another gig when someone needs a horn player or a bass player or a singer. And then, you know, every gig you go on, you meet someone new and they're like, oh, you play really well. And you like showed up on time and you were prepared. So next time you knew the songs. So next time I need something like that, then, you know, I might call you. So that turns into the occasional recording session for David Byrne and St. Vincent record. And
which is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
The tour was amazing, too.
I didn't get to... I had some friends on that played the tour, but, yeah. You know, they never sent me my copy of that record.
So, oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Apologies.
But it was fun to record that. I just did one song. They had a lot of different brass band, kind of brass groups going, and I played on the track with... It was like a mixture of the Dap Kings horns and Antibalas horns. And me. So,
I mean, you're in here today with a guitar, but is there a particular instrument that, well, list some of the instruments that you play?
Well, mostly guitar, bass, trumpet. I haven't been playing so much in the last few years, but bass, trumpet, and trombone, so kind of low brass. Bass guitar, which is maybe my favorite instrument to play, and occasionally keyboards. You know, I played on the Fela Broadway show keyboards because AJ wrote that into his part, so trombone and keyboards I had to play. And then I played when we went to Australia, maybe it was earlier this year, I played bass in that too. So
is there an instrument, like everyone says, like it's always hard to find like a good bassist and good drummer in a band. Is there a particular instrument that you feel like is your kind of like secret weapon, because it's hard to find like that particular weapon, instrument for ensembles?
It depends on who you talk to. Yeah. What is my secret weapon? Some people only know me as a horn player, and some people only know me as a singer and songwriter. You know, so I think the secret weapon might be, I don't know, maybe the electric bass, because I'm not that technically skilled at it. So I guess a lot of like rock bands and singer songwriter people want a bass player who doesn't want a rhythm section that doesn't really play too busy. They just want to have a nice groove, and that's all I can do. So
you're like, I got one thing, I do it real well. You know, I hope you like this. Yeah. Why don't we hear a song?
Okay.
What are you gonna play for us?
This, I think I'll start with a song. I have a record coming out in March, and this particular song is not on the record.
Okay.
And you might hear it later, because we recorded it for the record, but it's one of the B-sides. And
okay.
It's called 5 Months In.
Okay.
It has to do with moving to a big city and then leaving the big city for whatever reason.
Okay. Live on Snacky Tunes.
Some folks move to the city for anonymity, and other folks to spread their wings, to see and to be seen. When the money gets tight, the city lights don't shine and lose their all. When your luck returns, the hole that burns don't seem so bad at all, bad at all. Just a couple of drinks, you start to think of your old man sitting at home. So you call him up but no answer, and you hope he's not alone. You broke his heart when you started off for a love and a lifelong dream. If
5 months in this big old city turns cold and hard and mean. It turns cold and hard and mean. No small amount in your bank account, you work for months on end. Come April 1st, you pack your truck and head north with your best friend. By the time you hit Virginia, making plans for Friday night, Maryland seems welcoming. You stop for a roadside bite by a light. You trade it in your country views for the urban gray and black. You cross the bridge called Washington, no plans on looking back. The first time there in Union Square, you think you've found your scene. 5 months in this big old city, it's cold and hard. It turns cold and hard to me. Country hues for the urban gray and black. Across the bridge called Washington, no plans on looking back. The first time there in Union Square, you think you found your scene. 5 months in this big old city, it's cold and hard and mean. It turns cold and hard to me. Change your name to some alias and hope we'd all comply. You grab your keys, rushed off to work before your painting dried. Your writing only dwindled and your cello stayed in the dark. You advertise with all your pride, first night tending bar, tending bar. Now she's sleeping straight till Tuesday, still wearing Sunday's best. She's blowing off commitments, friends are worried half to death. Come home, little Susie, it's your father's dying plea. The farm is yours in that big old city, turned cold, hard, and mean. It turned cold and hard to me. Turn cold and hard and mean. I turn cold and hard and mean.
So touring with all those ensembles, how do you feel that's influenced your own songwriting? Or has it?
I'm not sure it has.
Okay. Is it more like a church and state type of separation? Like, this is the music you get hired to play, and then this is the music that you write?
No, I shouldn't say it. I'm not sure in which ways it has.
Okay.
Sometimes. Because if you're touring with the... If you're playing Fela's music, you're listening to his songs and his messages and playing them on different instruments or whatever. But as a singer, you're kind of getting in tune to what lyrically he's talking about, and so... Some of the songs on my next record are, kind of feel emboldened, for example, from Fela to speak about more political things or, social commentary. So that's one way that you can be.
Oh, interesting. So, like, the lyrics and the messages of the music, maybe less the music, but, like, what they're saying has kind of expanded you.
Sure, sure.
And what was it about Fela's music, or what was it, words that, like, gave you the confidence to speak up or speak out that you might not have otherwise had before?
Well, part of his story, I guess, that he kept going, even after getting his butt kicked so many times by, like, the police and the government, he couldn't stop singing about what he saw was wrong, for his, for everybody, not just the people in his own country, but, like, all of Africa and the world, kind of capitalism, et cetera, et cetera.
So what of those, maybe not those particular messages, but what messages have you seen in your own life that has now like kind of come into your new work?
I don't know, maybe kind of speaking out against, capitalism and you see it right here in New York City, you know, the more money you have, I guess now the closer you can live to Manhattan.
Right.
Besides getting pushed out to East New York and beyond, you know, I heard they were building like a new little colony out in the ocean somewhere so people can have an affordable place to live. Is that true? they're like building like another like garbage island so that...
Oh, I have no idea.
That's a joke.
I was like, you kept saying, I was like, yeah, that instance sounds about right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then like, yeah, but it's like garbage island's like super nice though. Like bad name, but like really it's super nice.
Yeah.
It's like Iceland, you know?
Yeah.
Iceland and garbage island. Why don't we hear another song?
Sure.
What's this one called?
This one, okay. So this one is, this is called The Bright Side, and this one, I'm actually in town to finish a new record and, kind of a mixtape style we'll put out on our own, hopefully, and then as soon as it's done, kind of thing. And this is called The Bright Side, speaking about, people getting in trouble for having little bits of marijuana on them, which I think is silly.
If you're facing the judge with a fistful of drugs, all accomplices fled from your sight. The responsible one feels the wrath, takes the brunt of it all with a false sense of pride. The papers all follow you from town to town. Your exes all forward the mail. For 36 moons, little food on her plate. She's an outlaw in the salty state. If you're still up at dawn, feeling trashed like a pawn in a game all the animals play. Light a candle to pray, light the bowl and relate to the wild ones, the witches and slaves. She fought for a freedom that doesn't exist. What's wrong with these people? She cried. Just 4 years ago and her case is dismissed. We'll drive round the border or fly. The shackles will fall to the ground. Released from the spell for a while. Don't punish a made-up mistake. Only two things to choose, either jail time or blues. The latter choice must make you stronger. Be it one state or more, if you don't know the laws, your sentence could stretch on forever. The bright side of torture is stories for days. The skeletons out of the closet. The music is soothing, inspiring to boot. the slow moving sweet dissonance. The shackles will fall to the ground, released from the spell for a while. Her record was cleaned by the maid. Don't punish a made up mistake.
So you said you're in town to finish the record. How's the process been going? You're working with Connor Oberst, right, on it?
We finished that record this summer.
Okay.
Connor and Mike Mogus produced that, and we recorded out in Omaha.
Okay.
At their awesome studio.
How long did you get to spend time in Omaha for?
Making that record?
Yeah.
We finished it in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So the first week, my band from here was out there, and the second week was mixing, so it was a lot of kind of hands on deck to finish it that quickly.
Yeah, it's really fast.
But you know, Mogus is a very busy man, and
yes,
so he had the 2 week window, yeah. and you know, we came in really prepared.
It's awesome.
The band did, and then you know, and everyone worked their butts off to make it happen. So this record we're finishing with a different producer. We did the basics here in New York, and then I moved to Omaha in early September.
Oh.
And then I did some overdubs at the same studio, and I'm coming back to mix and master those sessions. So
permanent residence in Omaha or temporary residence?
I indefinite residence.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about Omaha that has taken you out of New York City?
Well, chance would have it that Connor, one of our good friends, was living with Connor at his house, and he moved out with his girlfriend and bought another house. So Connor and his wife invited me to live with them in their wonderful house with their sweet dogs, and you know, so yeah, getting to, you know, having been playing with him for quite some time and working at the studio and it being affordable to live there,
yeah,
and getting to make more music and do things like make more records and participate in other records.
And is the scene still, I mean, you know, from my college radio days, Omaha was like this mecca of scene. Does that type of support and community still exist there, or is it different, or how would you describe it?
I've been working at hearing a lot of local music and touring bands at this club that a lot of the guys in the band Cursive own now, called Olivers.
Love Cursive.
Yeah.
One of my, like, all-time favorites.
Yeah, so... Okay. So when you have a band that owns a bar, they have all, you know...
Yeah.
They're so supportive. They have, you know, touring bands and
a
lot of local
system?
Bands. It sounds amazing in there.
Oh, man.
You should, I mean, next time you're in Omaha, come to Olivers.
Well, no, I mean, it's funny where, like, you see the difference between, like, venues that like have like it's fine,
yeah,
versus like the musician led one, and they just have like all these crazy like amps and everything, and this just sounds awesome.
The PA there sounds great. They don't have too much in the way of backline, so they let bands bring their own backline, that between Olivers being a place where musicians can come and play, bands can come and play, and Page Turners, which Oberst and our buddy Phil own, having less rock and roll, but I just played there the other night. So the scene is, I think, still, it's kind of early for me to tell. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, when you say it was like, you think it might have been their heyday, but I think there's still incredible.
Oh, I don't think it's heyday. I think it's like, it was more like a, hey, if you want to be a musician and be surrounded by musicians, this place is cheap. It's got good support and everything.
Yeah.
You know, and different cities over like the years, Montreal was like a hotbed for a long time. You know, there's just like, so I'm kind of curious, you know, if that still is the case and it's still supportive community.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I've found a lot of support out there so far.
Denton was another one too.
Yeah.
Where Midlake came from. They're just like, you know, these towns that are just like not necessarily major cities, but where it is, you can make a living and live.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's great. And I just imagine it's kind of close to a lot of other, you know, maybe slightly bigger cities. There's St. Louis, your Minneapolis, Chicago's not too far. You can get to the East Coast and the West Coast within like 2 hours flying. So it's awesome. it makes a lot of sense, you know.
Yeah.
Artists who want to, like myself, who want to.
So besides finishing the record, what's on the horizon? Tour?
Yeah. Playing some shows in town here. I guess I don't know when this airs, but I'm playing some.
You're playing in New York.
Playing in New York.
Yeah.
This week, a couple of shows, and then I'm going to Europe in mid-January, supporting a band from Manchester, and then for 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks on my own, and playing a couple of shows with The Good Life. It's like my new favorite band and good friends of mine. And so there's, I'll be in Europe for a month, mid-January to mid-February.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going out by myself. So a little nervous, but I'm very excited.
What an adventure, though.
I know. I haven't even bought my plane ticket back.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh.
So I need to.
Maybe get a subletter in Omaha.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the record that I did with Connor and Mike Mogis comes out on Team Love Records in late March. So, you know, hopefully doing some tours around that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to make sure we have time for one more song.
Okay.
But where can people find you, get your music, make sure they get the new record, learn all about you?
Okay. Probably.
Hit you up for an ensemble. Hire you for some groovy bass playing.
Yeah. Just miwilalupa.com.
Oh, easy.
Yeah, it's pretty.
That wasn't taken?
No, it wasn't taken. No. No.
Cool. So what are you going to take us out with?
This is a song that's probably going to, it's definitely going to be on the kind of mixtape called Beginner's Guide. And this is the title track to that one.
Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it. I hope all is well out there. We will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. Take us out.
All right.
Can you hear the sound of the waves? I can hear it from here. I think I made it. Got another several weeks of this mayhem. It's a rat city. It's a luxury. Gonna call old Kelly and ask her for $1,000. She's a future woman on the $20 bill. Naked, her breast exposed, just a little bit scared. All the Midwest looks, what will I be? Who will I be? Kiwi meat, will I stay on fleek or flee back to the city? Got a couple of questions about the last 10 odd years. First one, was I there? Did we use the time we all had wisely? Did we squander it? Celebrating everything, posing, fearing loneliness, growing bitter, or working for upgrade status someday. Oh, what could it be? A neighborhood, a high rise with a view, or a cottage in the countryside. How to prepare for a major change. Start selling, packing weeks in advance. Would you cry, yawned it last night, comforted by your courage? Would you notify a black Irish goodbye? We ain't playing. We leave in. Catch you on the flip side. Da 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 Can you hold the train doors open for a little longer? 'Cause I'm coming. Had to drop the keys off, sweep and do a dummy check. Paid my tab, square up with my bankroll friends. I get the feeling this is not unusual. Waving goodbye to the ghetto birds. Must be time for the show. First to compliment the millennials. It's your time to do the dance. Your tongue knot up, and you say I do, send a shout out. All the freelance freaks doing Lord's work, making major moves. To the garbage men, to the barkeeps, to the up all nighters, 9-to-5ers. How to prepare for a major change. Start selling, packing weeks in advance. Would you cry on your last night? Comforted by your courage, would you notify a black Irish goodbye? We ain't playing. Are we leaving? I'll catch you on the flip side.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.